Today on Straight Talk Africa, the 31st African Union Summit ended Monday in Mauritania. Some of the most important issues that affect the lives of millions of people on the continent were discussed during the heads of government meeting. Among them included combating corruption, a sustainable path to Africa's transformation. Now that the African leaders have talked the talk, can they in fact walk the talk? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studio headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I'll be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion and analysis of the 31st session of the African Union Summit held in Mauritania, whose theme was combating corruption.
And coming up later on, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We're going to reveal some of them ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
The 31st African Union Summit ended Monday in Mauritania under the theme Winning the Fight Against Corruption. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more.
Transparency International, the global anti-corruption watchdog, says Africa is the worst performing as a whole, but there is some momentum. Transparency International's Maggie Murphy describes Africa's year in corruption on the continent.
Established anti-corruption commissions or fraud offices, so they're actually taking the issue much more seriously. So we might see a bit of a delay. Maybe in 5 years' time we'll see some really great scores coming out of Africa, but there's a lot of work still to be done.
But things may change as some AU nations are taking measures to address corruption. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta have recently made clean governance their pet issue. Although Buhari is taking steps to fight corruption, it remains rampant. It's important to note that President Buhari is also the Africa Union's chairman for anti-corruption effort. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is pledging to stomp out graft. He recently asked all civil servants, public procurement and accounting officers to undergo a lifestyle audit. Earlier this week, at the African Union Summit in Mauritania's capital, leaders discussed corruption under the theme Winning the Fight Against Corruption, a sustainable path to Africa's transformation. Mauritanian President Mohamed Olad Abdelaziz, host of the summit, stressed that Africa must stomp out corruption to spur development and for the well-being of the continent's people. The current chairman of the African Union, Rwandan President Paul Kagame, has also been praised for his fight against corruption in public offices. During the summit, which was overshadowed by security failings in the Sahel, the leaders held discussions on several important issues. Among them were the AU's structural reforms, the African continent's free trade area and ways to resolve a crisis in Africa, and the realization of the African Agenda 2063. The leaders also discussed setting up a mechanism to return stolen money, which was largely pressed in tax havens abroad. The Africa Union says approximately 70% of income from Africa's resources are squandered or diverted. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. For more on the significance of the 2018 AU Summit, we are joined by Dr. Arikana Chihomboli Kwawo, the African Union Ambassador to the United States. She joins us via telephone link-up from Montego Bay, Jamaica. Good afternoon, Ambassador Chihomboli Kwawo.
Good afternoon, Shaka. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, of course, always having you on Straight Talk Africa. How is Jamaica? How is the weather like there?
Well, it is very hot, but of course beautiful. I'd rather be here than in Washington, D.C.
You seem to be extremely busy. You just returned from Mauritania. You went through D.C. and now you are in Jamaica. What are you doing there?
I am representing our chairman, Musa Faki Mahamat, at the opening session of the CARICOM Summit.
I see.
This afternoon.
I see. Give us a sense as to how the summit went in Mauritania.
Oh, it was really amazing. I have to tell you, I've now attended three of these summits since coming on board as the AU ambassador to Washington. And I have to say, the sense of Pan-Africanism is really growing much, much stronger among our heads of states. I find that it is just really beautiful to sit back and listen to the heads of states debating the issues from a very deep level, and to get the sense that they are truly all in sync and committed to moving Africa forward. So for me, increasingly, it's extremely refreshing to have the opportunity to have the African leaders in one room and listen to the direction in which they would like to take our continent.
What was the major focus of the summit?
I think the major focus, I would say all the issues that we're dealing with on the continent are very important. So it's very difficult for me to say which is major and which is minor, because it's a case of chicken and egg. But I would say the one that's really trending even worldwide is the AfCFTA. And so as Africa, as you know, but let me start by saying, quite often people don't quite understand the structure of the AU and where things fit in. So if you give me just a minute to describe, so we have the African Union, AU. That membership is the 55 African heads of states. And the Executive Council, below them is the Executive Council, which is made up of the 55 foreign ministers. And below the Executive Council, we have the PRC, Permanent Representative Council, which is made up of 55 ambassadors from each country who are stationed in Addis Ababa, which is where the African Union headquarters are. So I'm saying this to say, when you look at that structure, the reporting is decisions start with the PRC. PRC debate and they pass resolutions to the Executive Council. The Executive Council debates and then those resolutions are forwarded on to the Assembly, which is the African Union, which is made up of the African heads of states. So what I'm discussing is now the decisions that were now being taken by the African heads of states after all these other consultations. So going back to item number one, the African Continental Free Trade Area, all the heads of states, there were over 30 heads of states who were present, and the others sent their representatives unanimously. Are so excited about the CFTA. I think quite a few countries, but the one that got the loudest applause was when South Africa, Ambassador Ramaphosa said South Africa was going to sign. Currently, before the summit, 44 countries out of 55 had signed the AfCFTA. We only need, out of those, 22 to ratify. But many more countries signed. So by now, I would think we are at probably over 50. I need to double check the last figures. That almost all the African countries would have signed the protocols on the CFTA. Of the ratifications, we need only 22. I know we have a minimum of 6 countries already that have ratified. By now, it's probably more. Then the other protocol that was signed in addition to the CFTA was the protocol for the free movement of people and residents. That one, we only need 15 countries to ratify. Before the summit, we already had 30 countries that had signed. And of the ratifications for the free movement of people, I believe a few more countries were going to turn in their ratification documents. The first country to turn in its ratification document for the free movement of people was Rwanda. So So Rwanda has signed the ratification, has submitted its ratification for the CFTA. Rwanda has submitted the ratification for the free movement of people. So as you can see, if we were to turn around and say, by December, all the countries have signed, and we have our 22 needed ratifications for the CFTA, we have our 15 needed ratifications for the free movement of people. Exactly 30 days after that, they're ready for implementation. So the conversation was based more on implementation, realizing that we are definitely going to have the ratifications that we need by December. The mood was jovial as individual heads of states got up and proclaimed that they were going to sign. Mm. The room was erupting in cheers. And so I think everybody felt that the CFTA was moving in the right direction. Then when you take the CFTA, it rolls you right into the issue of migration. You ask yourself, why are Africans migrating? But what was interesting, there's a document that was presented by Dr. Lopez, who is working with the chairman, Musa Faki Mahamat. It was interesting when he gave out an analysis of migration around the world. When you look at migration out of India, China, Europe, individually, their migration rate is much higher than Africa.
I hear you.
And I found that very interesting. And then furthermore, the bulk of Africa's migration is within Africa, which is why it now makes it relevant that the protocol for the free movement of people be signed and accelerated in order to address this issue. For example, you will find people from DRC becoming refugees in the neighboring countries. But you also find people from neighboring countries becoming refugees in the DRC.
Let's go back to trade. You talked about how South Africa, for example, has indicated that it will soon sign. What about the fact that Africa's largest economy, Nigeria, has pretty much said nothing about it?
Yes. Again, for the same reason that there was a delay with South Africa, they had to make sure that everybody in the country is satisfied. Nigeria is going through the same process as well, but the president has indicated that they are going to sign and they are in the final stages of addressing different issues with different stakeholders. But they're definitely going to sign. They just want to make sure that when they sign, it is a document that is not going to create problems back home, because some people might feel their voices were not heard. But Nigeria is definitely going to sign, but they are in the process of finishing up.
Talk to us about one of the themes of the summit, which was combating corruption.
That was a big one. It again ties in into why it is important to implement the AFCFTA. Corruption is an issue. And you would find it interesting that Buhari was tasked with the responsibility of leading this committee. And he actually, in his own country, has implemented programs that have led to Nigeria recovering billions of dollars. And so this is something that the heads of states are taking extremely seriously. So yes, the opening statements, opening remarks were from Buhari, followed by his own presentation on what he has done in Nigeria. And then after that, the individual African countries also stood up and gave a report on what they have done, the programs they have implemented in their respective countries, to see to it that we fight corruption once and for all. But also, one thing was clear, and all the heads of states also stated this, that while we are fighting corruption within Africa, we have to realize that it takes two to tango. So those elements that are also bringing corruption from outside Africa, which when you look at the dollar figure are even higher. They too must be addressed, and we must follow them aggressively. So it's a two-prong approach. While we deal with corruption in Africa, let's not forget the bigger players who are coming from outside, who in most cases are also facilitating some of the externalization of funds that is taking place. So yes, all the heads of states once again committed to aggressively fight corruption and putting measures in place to cut down on corruption in their respective countries. Very important topic.
What about some critics who say that you are pretty much really dealing with symptoms unless you address the issue of electoral justice?
That one, when you look at the issue of democracy and good governance, it goes back to corruption as well. It's like a circle. One feeds into the other. Democracy and good governance, it goes back even to the masses. I would like to say my own humble opinion. I would like to take it back to the Berlin Conference of 1884. Our mindset as Africans, our mindset as black people, somehow we seem to have forgotten to think through issues on our own at times. If you take, for example, the issue that I had started alluding to, like migration, the facts are there, but somehow we are made to see things the way others see it. We are spoon-fed, and we react to what we are being told, which quite often is superficial and not the depth of the issue. So my humble opinion would be to say for us as Africans to really take the time to understand who we are, why we are where we are, and in a very realistic way, make the right decisions. Now, we have a lot of African leaders who are doing very well by their people. So please, let's not blanket that as an issue for all of Africa.
I understand where you are coming from, but there are people who say, wait a minute. How can, for example, a leader or a ruler who actually steals an election, which is equivalent to stealing a country, have the moral authority to fight or curb corruption?
Well, again, you have a valid point. You have a very valid point as far as that is concerned. And it again goes back to, it's just an unfortunate situation when an election is rigged. But that's not to say Africa is just like any family. You have your alcoholic uncle, you have your schizophrenic aunt, you got your menopausal mother. You understand them. Africans are human, just like everybody else. Our democracies are very young. So we are in the process of growing up and learning. Mistakes will be made, but as the African leaders continue to meet, they begin to point things out to each other. This is part of the process when they're talking about combating corruption. They're putting the leaders who are not doing well by their people, they're putting them on notice. They're having them come and stand up and be accounted. Keep in mind, the membership as the AU is voluntary. So the fact that the leaders are remaining members on a voluntary basis and are willing to sign and commit to taking certain measures, that is a plus. The conversation has started.
I hear you.
I mean, we are no different. Look at other parts of the world. They're still struggling. Those who have had democracy for centuries,
they're still
struggling with democracy. So I'm not justifying the behaviors of some heads of states. What I can say is I would like to highlight the good work that's being done by the majority of the African heads of states. And that, for the record, that the ones who are not doing well, believe me, there is a lot of work that's being done behind the scene by the African Union. Chairman Musa Faki Mahamat, he's all over the continent like a chicken without a head, trying to put out this fire.
Thank you.
The AU is very aware of those leaders who they need to continue to work with to make sure that every African head of state is, above all, looking out for the best interest of the Africans.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Arikana Chihombori Kwawo. We appreciate you taking the time off to talk to us from Montego Bay, Jamaica.
Thank you so much for having me, Shaka. Have a great one and happy July 4th.
You're most welcome. Same to you.
Bye-bye.
Joining us here in the studio are two distinguished guests, Dr. Musimaku Aslat, former senior diplomatic official, Ethiopian Foreign Ministry, and Ni Akwete, African policy analyst and activist. He previously served with TransAfrica here in Washington. Gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa on this most important July 4th.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting us.
You're most welcome.
Thanks, my brother.
No, you're most welcome. You listened to Madam Ambassador. You listened to what she talked about corruption. Is it possible, sincerely, the fact that most, not really a minority, a majority of the African continent, when you look at the countries there, the manner in which elections are decided, sincerely, is very questionable. You're talking about elections where governments use what some characterize as creative accounting. You're talking about elections whose results do not reflect the will of the people. Would you think that such a ruler has the moral, for example, authority, sincerely, to curb corruption within his borders?
Asking me? All right. Thank you very much, Shaka. I'm very much impressed by the enthusiasm and optimism of Ambassador Bakihana. I'm sure that she's thinking a lot about what could have happened, what could be happening in Africa, and she may be seeing a lot of promise because being there on the spot many times. However, as you said, Shaka, stealing elections is the same as stealing money.
Stealing a country, not the same. You actually steal a country.
Stealing a country. It is making the voice of the people useless.
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant. This is the dictatorship. That's extreme.
You're like a mafia, really. Mafia
this is a mafia organization. It can do what you want. It can do what it will. And the country is more or less considered to be their fiefdom. Their rule, or for their family, or for their mafia colleagues, and this is very true in almost all African countries. We can only say two or three or four.
Botswana,
for example, which
Mauritius.
Is a very good example. Mauritius too, and then you stop.
Some other countries,
very few small countries, but the bigger ones, including from my friend's country here, Nigeria, or mine, Ethiopia. It's corrupt, totally, absolutely.
But listen, in the particular case of the incumbent president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari, I think that he commands the moral authority to do what he is doing against corruption. Wouldn't you think so?
I hope so. But, of course, as I say, if you talk the talk, you have to do the walk.
And, you have to walk the talk.
You have to walk the talk. And Africa has been around since the establishment of the OAU for over 60 years. And we have not seen the light. The distinguished ambassador says that, well, Europe has been there practicing democracy for hundreds of years. But we have to really see what's going on in Europe for citizens' rights, for human rights and everything.
You know,
and what's happening in Africa is absolutely nothing compared to that.
I didn't get the time to ask her this question. For example, when you look at the Organization of African Unity, which was founded back in 1963, you can actually look at its report card. You can talk about the successful decolonization of African countries from European powers. You can look at the end of apartheid in South Africa and all that kind of stuff. But when you look at its successor institution, the African Union, which was founded in 2001 in Addis Ababa and launched a year later in Durban, South Africa, what has it really accomplished so far, in your view?
Thank you, Shaka, again for having me. I think you raise a good point, but I do think we have to... One, I would advance a couple of things that I give the Africa Union good marks for. There are some things that I criticize them for, so it's not to say they are perfect. But number one, keeping the countries in in an organization so that we are all there talking and comparing notes as Africans. That is very important because and they took the baton from the OAU. So they are taking the work to the next stage. As you mentioned, the OAU fought to bring independence to Africa. But part of the colonial experience was to divide Africans. So keeping Africa united is continuing that work. We have to be independent. We have to see ourselves as one people, pan-Africanism. We have to unite. You look to the north. The European Union seems to be splintering. So the fact that the African Union is not splintering, Morocco just came back. I give them marks for that. I also give them marks because they put down their foot. It's not the whole thing, but they took a major step when they said, if you make a coup, you don't belong in the Africa Union. Africa has been plagued by soldiers who use the guns to take over the countries, and that is horrible. So the fact that they stopped that makes me proud. I think a high watermark was when they kept Marshal Sisi out of the Africa Union in 2013 because he made a coup when the United States, the huge United States, did not want to call it a coup. The Africa Union said, it's a coup. You cannot come here until you hold elections, even if the elections were sham. I think the Egyptian elections were sham, but at least they said, go back and do elections before you can come. So I give them marks for those things. But yes, there are other things that they haven't done that they are following up on. And one particular peeve of mine is, I think what happened in Zimbabwe was a coup, but the African Union did not do anything about it. So I am with you. I think there's work to be done, but they are continuing. And the environment in which they are in now is a little more complicated. During the colonial period and independence, the 50s and 60s, it was clear who the enemy was. It was clear what we had to fight against. Right now, the African Union is funded by these outside powers who manipulate Africa.
You're right.
Trying to get out of that is a little more complicated and difficult.
You're right, because, in fact, even the beautiful 200 million headquarters in Addis Ababa is with love from Beijing.
China.
But let me ask you this question. You seem to actually have compared the two institutions, the African Union and the European Union, and you allude to the fact that at least you think the European Union seems to be splitting. How can you say it is splitting simply because one country, the United Kingdom, decided to go its way? Could you have said that when Morocco, for example, left the OAU?
Well, you are right. Morocco did leave, and with regard to the European Union, it is just the UK that is in the process of leaving Brexit. So you are totally right. But I am actually sympathetic and sharing the point that the ambassador made, which is that Africans are people. African leaders are in the same political environment as many other places. Keeping countries, keeping continental unions is very difficult, whether it's in the Americas or the Europeans. And in Europe, it's not just the British has made it formal, but you look, Poland is having problems, and Hungary are having problems. They are saying, we don't agree with these values, so we want to leave.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our ally right now. You're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at voanews.com/African Beat.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've received great social media feedback, as always this week. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari presented this year's AU Summit theme, Winning the Fight Against Corruption, a Sustainable Path to Africa's Transformation. And so this leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, how important is the African Union Summit? We're going to start things off here with a tweet from Derek Muganza, who says, the AU Summit in Kigali missed the opportunity of having a unified currency for the continent. Think of it as the African Afro trading as the AFR on the foreign exchange market. We have another tweet from Mr. CA, who says, the African Union summit is important. Africans solving African problems. It helps to bring us together as one. And now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Yahaya Ahmed Gumel from Jigawa, Nigeria, who writes, the African Union summit is increasingly becoming unimportant, especially as it fails to develop a clear strategic roadmap that can solve the multitude of challenges facing the continent. To become relevant again, the AU requires an overhaul and transformation to reassert itself as a body capable of giving Africa a new look. Let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Alfanur Abu from Asela, Ethiopia, who says, there is no doubt the AU summit is important, but how do we influence its leaders to make it more important? Our last Facebook comment comes from Azele Banda from Katete, Zambia, who writes, African Union leaders hold a summit to socialize and pay lip service to each other. Nothing tangible or concrete comes out of their social gatherings. AU leaders have turned a blind eye to the conflict in South Sudan and leaders unconstitutionally clinging to power after their terms have expired. And so a reminder for you, of course, that we appreciate all of your audience feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And you can also comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the following keywords, Straight Talk Africa. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. You can also join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And, of course, do follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page that is on our website. And to watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is ahead for next week's show. On the next Straight Talk Africa, The 31st African Union Summit has wrapped up in Mauritania with advisory decisions on Libya, Somalia and South Sudan. AU leaders discuss security, trade, corruption and migration. The significance of the African Union with the Deputy Chairperson Kwesi Kwarti on the next Straight Talk Africa. And that is all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests, of course, have a lot of social media comments to discuss. So I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thanks, Heidi. And today, of course, we are talking about the 2018 African Union Summit held in Mauritania, whose theme was combating corruption. Our guests are Dr. Musmaku Aslat, former senior diplomatic official with the Ethiopian Foreign Ministry, and Ni Akwete, African policy analyst and activist. He also previously served with TransAfrica here in Washington. Well, gentlemen, once again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you on Straight Talk Africa on this July 4th.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
You're most welcome. You know, there are some critics who look at the African Union and say that the African Union, in their words, not mine, is really useless. It's kind of like a toothless bulldog. It's an institution that has the teeth, but these teeth do not bite. There are others who actually look at it cynically and even allege or claim that, look, this is simply an opportunity for dictators in Africa to meet, compare notes, wine, and dine. Are these fair criticisms, really, given the fact that the African Union has no sovereign powers?
Well, personally, myself, I think it's a very, very valid argument. In fact, I was thinking about, you know, the Olympics meets every 4 years, World Cup every 4 years. I think the African leaders, it's time for them to meet every 4 years. Also, perhaps have a regional meeting every 2 years.
Why 4 years?
Because it is talking shop.
Is it a wastage of resources?
A waste of resources.
Which could have been plowed into service delivery for their people and all kind of stuff?
Service delivery to their people. They go into such tremendous expenses to host a meeting just to glorify themselves. And nothing is happening. I'm sure that the first few years of the OAU was a very significant one. It's good they met every year because they came closer, they became aware of each other. I was a student journalist when the OAU was being established, and I've noticed everything that was going on. It was very euphoric and very, very enthusiastic, and they really felt that they were the same. And also, it has achieved the liberation of Africa because the liberation movement in office in Tanzania, I used to go there several times, was doing a good job. And now that AU is established, they could not go the next step. They were not able to do the step like the way they imitated European Union is. The European Union, if you go into it, they have made so many fundamental units. It came, I mean, as a,
you have to meet,
as coal and steel industry. And
you have to meet specific benchmarks.
Benchmarks,
to
yes.
Be a member country of the European Union. But you do not really have to meet anything other than to be a politically independent country, to be a member of the African Union. And yet, Madam Ambassador said it is, in fact, voluntary. You have to volunteer to join the African Union.
Well, Shaka, you know, all due respect, may I take a different position from the distinguished ambassador?
And to, why not?
To the question that you ask, is it fair
criticism?
Criticism. I say it is not. I say it is overblown for this reason. The first thing is that the African Union is not perfect. That's the point. They haven't done everything perfectly. They have made mistakes. But are they useless? If they did not exist, if the African Union did not exist, will Africa and Africans be better off? I say no. The African Union needs to make more progress, but we need it. We need to do better. But the other point I want to point out is people who make these big criticisms out there, I've been an activist for decades. It is those who stand on the sidelines who make the harshest criticism because it takes responsibility from them. Democracy is number one. But what is democracy? Democracy has to be fought for by the people. Now, what gives me hope, if you look at Afrobarometer, all in every country, the people are saying we want more democracy. When we say countries are being stolen, you are right. Bad elections are terrible. But it is by the political leaders. The people constantly say we want democracy. So we, the people, have to keep fighting for it. But it is very dangerous and very irresponsible to say the African Union should be abolished. It shouldn't exist. They get together to talk. And the fact that we stay together, even if we don't have benchmarks, we do have benchmarks, they are just not criteria for kicking you out. Why?
What kind of benchmarks are you talking about?
Right. We have the peer review mechanism, okay, where we set down...
That is on paper, my friend. In reality, what does it in fact mean?
This is my point. This is my point that we are making progress gradually. I want to emphasize that the reason why we say if you are an African country, you can come in is because of our history of being divided. Africa was chopped into 54 colonies and countries. So we have to keep each other together. If we say you haven't
now,
met...
by the way, 55 if you include Western Sahara.
Thank you. Yes, this is my point. So it is important to say we are family. Even if you are behaving badly, we have to try and find ways to keep you in the family and talk to you, because the outside world want to divide Africa into small little pieces so they can steal our resources. I hope we get to talk about corruption.
When you talk about stealing, really, what about the fact that we are talking about individuals who happen to be presidents of certain countries,
yes,
who actually are engaged in the business of stealing elections?
Absolutely.
And where is the African Union when we need it?
Precisely.
Who does it represent, in fact? Does it represent the people of Africa, or does it, in fact, represent or reflect the interests of individuals who happen to occupy State House?
We are making slow progress. It should belong to the people. We are making slow progress of trying to make... This is, again, the point that the African Union, the achievement I give the African Union high marks was when they said, if you make a coup, if you come to power by unconstitutional means, you don't belong here. Because constitutional means mean that your people really want you to lead them. We haven't done it perfectly. And I will state again, I am unhappy with what happened in Zimbabwe. It was a military coup. The African Union should have said it's a military coup. Find a way to hold real elections and you can come. So I agree with you.
But you are happy with what the African Union did with regards to Egypt?
Yes, because they said to Marshall,
did it really make any difference?
It made, you see...
What difference did it make?
The difference that it made...
The only democratically elected president of Egypt...
Yes.
Since its history, really.
Yes.
He's in prison.
He is in prison. And since Mr. Sisi, General Sisi, took over, he has repressed a whole lot of people. So by no means is Egypt even close to being perfect. But it was a step in the right direction. You know,
you're a very kind man. You keep using perfect.
Yes. Yes, because we live in a very imperfect world. And you see, what worries me
but
is that...
What about the fact that when a Kanu,
yes,
wakes up very early in the morning before his colleagues and seizes power with a tank?
Yes.
Or AK-47,
yes.
It is now normal, very conventional, that the African Union and the international community,
yes,
will completely refuse,
yes,
to do business as usual with that colonel. Where is the international community when an incumbent African president steals an election?
I actually, there, I agree with you wholeheartedly, because I think the international community has a responsibility and they drop it. In fact, we should do a program on the irresponsibility of the international community in propping African leaders, beginning with Washington, okay? We prop up bad leaders in Africa. You know, there is a documentary elsewhere about Hissène Habré of Chad. Ronald Reagan put him in power. So the international community undermines African democracy. I am all against that. What I am for is that we, the Africans, must understand we must build our democracy, and it begins with trying not to divide ourselves so much and disunify ourselves so much that then we can't do democracy. So, yes, we are not perfect. Our progress is slow. I don't even say a glass half full, because to my mind, we are less than half full. But we have some water in the glass.
Is it possible that, in fact, it is half empty?
Yes. Half empty. But when you are looking at the negatives, I happen to think that we Africans get dismissed and abused and discriminated against all the time. So it's about time that we focus that we have done some good things.
I see.
One quick thing. The Europeans took over 5 continents. Africa is the only continent that freed itself. The Australians didn't. The South Americans didn't. The North Americans didn't. Africa freed itself. So we need to focus on what we are good at to energize us, to say if we can decolonize ourselves, we can fight corruption, we can fight stealing of elections. So we need to stress that we have some strengths and build on them. This is my point.
Just let me add. Very grandiose projects are being taken by OAU, everything by AU when it meets. Just to mention a few, in 1980, it was the Lagos Plan of Action to have self-reliance.
Right.
1981 in Nairobi, it's African Charter of Human and Political Rights. 1985, African Poverty Prevention and Economic Recovery. 1990, Declaration of Political, Social, and Economic Situation in Africa. I can go on. All these things are just words. They have not been implemented in any country in Africa. They come in, the big declarations are emerge. It's a name is attached to it, Lagos Plan, Nairobi, Lomé, whatever, Algiers and Lomé.
They have huge delegations.
Huge delegations
staying in
five-star hotels.
Essentially living on the
really
backs
has
of very
stop.
Ordinary African peasants, really.
What I would like to talk to the doctor is these things have to stop. We can't go on like this, pretending that we are doing something. Let at least recognize that we have to do work in our own country and meet every 4 years, like the Olympics.
Save that money for providing education, for example.
For other things. And
for providing medical care.
I have said to the
ambassador. And then meet is regionally every 2 years, maybe.
I was disagreeing in the last point. Now I want to say I do agree. Lagos Plan of Action, so many plans done that are not implemented. Yes, but I'm saying we need to understand that this is a difficult process. Now we have to move very quickly because, as Nwalimu said, where others have walked, we must run. So I am impatient for us to make progress. But what I'm saying is a culture of cynicism and saying we are no good and we cannot ever do anything right, and therefore we should abolish the African Union, I think, is going too far. Yes, we need to make good progress. And it comes from the people. This is what I'm saying.
It comes from
the people. The people have to hold the leaders accountable. The people cannot sit on their hands and say, well, our leaders are corrupt. I've talked to Africans who say, we will be better off unless God, when God sends us wonderful leaders. So until then, we have to wait. No, we, the people, must do God's work. We must push our leaders. We must be active. We must scream. We must vote. We must point out when elections are being...
Vote when your vote, in fact, does not count?
You vote and you scream when it is being stolen. Okay? This is the point. Because if you don't do it, the international community actually wants a divided, weak Africa that they can steal from. So we must look to ourselves. We, the African people, are the ones to do the hard, tough work. Let's hold our leaders accountable. But let's also recognize that we have done some good things. I am worried about the pessimism that says we Africans cannot do anything. That worries me.
How do you respond to some people who say that a lot of these African countries, in fact, do not really organize elections for their primary stakeholders? their own people. Mm-hmm. That these elections, in fact, are organized for the development partners, the donors, the donor community, who have to justify in turn how and why they have to provide aid to these countries. How do you respond to that, Dr.
That's actually where the fallacy is. The Western countries, they send observers to observe elections. I can take the issue of my country, where the came with 100% vote. Said I was elected 100%. The Western observers came. They said yes, perfect, 100%. He got it. President Obama went there and said, "Yes, you are 100% elected."
Absolutely.
And everybody knows.
With a smile.
With a smile. With his Susan Rice smiling behind him. So this is just a joke. The donor countries are fooling us. They know they can manipulate us the way they want, and they don't even believe that these things do really happen. So, what is election for? It's just a farce. It's a joke. There was an election in Ethiopia when the opposition won over 90% of the vote.
You're talking about 2005?
2005, yes. Then the person in power just shot the demonstrators and said, "I won."
But let's talk briefly about...
That's how it goes. So every country does the same thing.
Let's talk briefly about efforts, some of these efforts, especially in Nigeria under President Buhari and in Kenya under President Uhuru Kenyatta, to fight against corruption. It seems to be very interesting because, especially in Kenya, they are bringing a very interesting approach, which is very simple. Even a person who happens to be blind can see it, because all the time you talk about corruption, they say, "Where is the evidence?" We are talking about a lifestyle audit here. You have this helicopter. You have this SUV. You have a house in Potomac. You have a house in Muthaiga. You have a house in London, Hempstead, and stuff like that. Can you account how you got these things? Because we know what your salary is.
I think it's amen to that, the fighting corruption, because the monies that are stolen through corruption are monies meant for the people, for schools, for roads, you name it. So there's no question. So good ways of finding it. I am fighting it. Yes, Kenya. Yes, Nigeria. But we also, again, I'll come down to the role of the people. You know, in Ghana, there is a journalist, Aremeo.
He has exposed a lot of people.
Yes.
Including a Kenyan referee who was supposed, in fact, to be innocent, participating in this World Cup.
Thank you. So this is my point, that in all of these issues, we have to understand it is we the people, okay? I live in Washington, D.C., but that's not why I'm quoting the beginning of the American Declaration. But if you want democracy, look to the people. Now, I will say again that we must not forget some of the things that Africans have done right, and I'm saying you have to look at journalists. You have to look at Burkina Faso, where it wasn't the political leadership or the military. It was ordinary people in the streets. You look at the DRC. Ordinary activists are doing things. So
ordinary people in collaboration, my brother, with members of not only the army of Burkina Faso, but in fact, the presidential guards.
Precisely. You know, you mentioned, and thank you for that I used to work at TransAfrica. One of the quotations I have from that is, in the U.S., they said, look, when you, the people, organize a parade, the so-called leaders will run and jump in front. In Burkina Faso, the people started it. And then the palace guards, who realized where their bread is buttered on now, came and joined. So it is always we the people. And the Americans have a way of conceptualizing democracy. What is democracy? They call it the consent of the governed. We the people who are governed, if you want to govern us, you need our consent. So I'm saying again and again and again, look to the grassroots.
grassroots. Look to activists. Look to we the people. Don't trust the politicians. Don't trust the military. And for goodness sake, don't trust the international community. They are the ones who colonize us. They are the ones who prop up our bad leaders. They are the ones who pump arms so we can fight. Okay?
But how do we really break this jinx of defining democracy as a government of some people, by some people, for some people?
Ordinary people have to say, this is my life they are talking about. The Mercedes and the money stolen are my money, so I'm going to guard it. I'm a citizen.
Switzerland is actually responding because they are actually giving Nigeria back $1.2 billion U.S. stolen money from Nigeria.
Yes, they are returning it. It's not a gift from them.
They are returning.
There are some in the United States. I know that the Buhari government has been pushing to get that back. So I think that we the Africans in the United States, okay, we need to, we have room. We need to be pushing the United States government to say, when the money is identified as stolen, send it back.
But you didn't answer the question really about this again. Lifestyle audit. Is it a great thing?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful thing. And I'm even saying, let's bring it over here. You mentioned houses in Potomac. This is a very expensive area of Washington, D.C.
I know some.
And McLean, overlooking the Potomac. These are very expensive houses. And then you go to the West Coast, okay? All over the United States.
You go to California.
Yes. So
Malibu.
I think it is true.
The
and
Vice
it is
President
important.
Of Equatorial Guinea, who happens to be the son of President Theodore Obiang, a $30 million mansion in Malibu.
Yes. So the lifestyle audit is a great idea. We must pick up the foreign angle of it and push the governments that we live under now and say, look, this African leader has a $10 million house here. Cooperate with his government to find out how he got the money. We need to know.
Interesting. Any last work?
Well, I'm really impressed by the enthusiasm of my friend here. But how do the people speak? You say, can't do it. But the people are enslaved. How do they speak? How do they speak out?
You can speak here because speak it's a totally here, yes. different political environment. But because you have very strong institutions.
Yes.
And, you know, people are allowed to express themselves.
It is absolutely true that it's hard for ordinary Africans to speak, but I think those of us who are safer here, and you are correct, we have to speak too. We have to say to the U.S. government, why is your ally in an African country jailing people? We have a role in giving voice to the people on the continent. I spent decades doing that.
So what about the issue, for example, in Uganda?
Yes.
Of the government taxing social media, so that people obviously perhaps do not really have the opportunity to express themselves.
Uganda happens to be a strong ally of the United States, okay? Uganda, the U.S. has military in Uganda as we speak. If the U.S. was serious about an issue, President Museveni will listen. So I agree with you. I think the U.S. government needs to make its voice heard that we are against this, and the Africans here need to put pressure on Congress and put pressure on the U.S. administration to say, this is a question of free speech in Uganda. Put pressure on President Museveni to stop it.
What can Ugandans do on the ground?
Well, as you mentioned, they are in trouble. You know, this is a leader who has been in power since 1986, okay? Over 32 years. And he's not afraid to brutalize people. So, as you said, Ugandans who speak are taking some risks. They should take it, but I'm saying those of us who are safe, and I think all three of us are agreeing, those of us who are safer here, we need to do our part, and we do our part.
The president will tell you that he is there because he succumbs to pressure and that Uganda holds periodic elections. Well, on that note, thanks to our guests, Dr. Musimaku Asalat and Ni Akwete, Ambassador Dr. Arikana Chombori Kwao, who joined us earlier via telephone link-up from Montego Bay, Jamaica. Thanks to our affiliate stations along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.